Support for New Day comes from the Jed Foundation. Jed takes a comprehensive approach to protecting mental health and preventing suicide among teens and young adults with programs for individuals, families, schools, and communities. The Jed Media team believes storytelling can change and save lives and is proud to partner with Lemonada Media on this journey. Thank you for joining us, too. Learn more at jedfoundation.org.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Hi, I'm Claire Bidwell Smith. Welcome to New Day. I'm curious, what's your anxiety level these days? I would say mine is low to medium at the moment, but I've been struggling with anxiety for over 2 decades. It first showed up in my life around the time my mother died when I was a teenager, and it kind of never left. Panic attacks, phobias, catastrophic thinking, hypochondria, obsessive worry, it was not fun. These days, I'm in a good place with it all, though. I've learned so much about anxiety that I generally know how to work with it and keep it at a low level. But anxiety can be crippling, and I know that more people than ever are struggling with it these days. Even before the pandemic, we were at an all-time high, and now even more of us are experiencing it. The good news is that anxiety is highly treatable. There are so many techniques to use that can help you get into a calmer space. And today's episode is packed with information about how to work with anxiety. My guest is comedian, writer, filmmaker, and mental health advocate Kelsey Darra. Kelsey is the author of Don't Fucking Panic, a workbook that helps folks manage debilitating anxiety disorders, panic attacks, and depression. You might also know her from BuzzFeed, TikTok, and YouTube. So with all that, you know you're in for a really fun conversation that will also be super helpful. I want to say, though, that I know that for some of us, even just talking about anxiety can make us, well, anxious. But I promise that you're going to come away from today's conversation with a whole new take on how to manage it, not to mention some really awesome tips and tools. Hi, Kelsey. Nice to meet you.
You as well.
Thanks so much for coming on New Day.
Of course.
I start every episode by asking my guest, how are you doing? But how are you really doing?
I love that. Let's see. Let me get heart centered then and check in. Doing my somatic scanning, feeling a little pressure in my right shoulder. But other than that, my mood is great.
Awesome. I have to preface this whole interview by letting you know that I live up in Northern California, and it's apparently mating season for the wild turkeys, and there's like a really big one in the yard, and you might hear him gobble here and there.
That is hilarious.
He's a big guy. Yeah, and he seems serious.
I was going to say, first of all, do you say curse words on this podcast?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. What's it like to watch a turkey fuck?
I have not yet been privy to that, but I will update you when I get a glimpse of that one.
Yeah, I'd really like some feedback. I'm very curious.
So today we're going to talk about anxiety, which is something I love to talk about. And I think a lot of people really appreciate hearing about. And seems like you've got a lot of really great insights and thoughts and, you know, your own slew of anxiety.
Absolutely.
So I had my first panic attack when I was 18. My mom had just died. And, you know, I had never been an anxious person before, never gone through any kind of panic attack and, you know, ended up in an ER thinking I was dying pretty early on after she was gone. And you know, back then, I'm dating myself now, I'm almost 44, so this was like 25 years ago. And back then, the people in the ER were just like, oh, you're a teenager, you're probably doing drugs. I wasn't. They ran all these tests. They said, you know, you probably just have heart palpitations. And they sent me on my way. They never asked me
if anything was going on in my life. You know, I was a new college student. My mom had just died. Of course, I was anxious, but they never presented that idea to me. So for years after that, I lived with crippling anxiety, but just thought there was something extra wrong with me. And it took me a while to put the pieces together. What was the start of your anxiety?
Thank you for sharing that with me. I've got a similar story to you. So I always had told this tale of my beginning of anxiety. A lot of people know me from the content I made at BuzzFeed when I worked there for 5 years. And there was some videos I made where I talked about my first panic attack was when I was 17 years old and I was on an airplane and I almost landed the plane.
Not a fun place.
No. Yeah. I had never like landed a plane before, but I was like, this is a new experience for me. And that in my mind was what I thought was the beginning of many ER visits of something's wrong with my heart, something's wrong with me. I don't know how to explain it, but something doesn't feel right. And when I started to write the book, I had to go back and interview my friends and family to say, like, where did this actually really begin? And it turned out that I had started experiencing panic attacks way earlier than I had remembered. As a toddler, I was diagnosed with asthma and I probably got it, you know, my neural pathways conflicted with what was asthma and panic attack. And, you know, my mom would tell me stories about when I was little, I'd come home from a soccer game and I felt like I couldn't breathe and they thought it was my asthma and they'd give me my medicine. It wasn't that. They'd take me to the children's hospital. They did all these tests. And as soon as they said, we're going to give her some baby Valium because she needs to like calm down so we can run these tests, I would fall asleep and everything was fine. Wow. And, you know, you'd think at that point they would have said, hey, this girl, this little child has anxiety. You should probably take her to like a child psychologist. No, they also sent me on my way back. They didn't give my parents any resources. We kind of just went, well, that was weird. And went on with the rest of my life. And so until I had the verbiage and the vocabulary to describe what was happening to me wasn't until I was about 17 years old.
And at that point, was there someone who pointed out that it was anxiety?
Yeah, it was after I had smoked weed for the first time.
Enough to give anyone a panic attack.
Exactly. And my friend's aunt, whose house we were smoking at, you know, she was the cool house to be at because she was raised by her aunt, not her mom. And her aunt was like, you're having a panic attack. And I was like, yeah, whatever that is sounds right. Like, definitely panicking, but like, there's got to be something structurally wrong with me. And she's like, no, this is a, you know, biopsychosocial experience. And I didn't care or know what that meant at the time. But my first therapist/psychologist was the first one to really say the word anxiety disorder. And again, that was like around 17 after the airplane. Mm-hmm. You know, at that time, I just wouldn't stop complaining enough to be like, I need to see someone about something, and went on medication for the first time. Yeah.
I am just fascinated by anxiety. So in my journey, I ended up, you know, putting the pieces together when I was in grad school and college, kind of studying psychology and reading about trauma and PTSD. And I was like, wait. And by that point, my father had died as well. So I had two dead parents. I was in my 20s. And I was finally like, wait, maybe I'm anxious because my parents died. I mean, nobody had pointed this out. And I finally put this connection together. But one of the things that I think is so interesting about anxiety is how physical it is. You know, we really have these very real physical symptoms that most people will think that there's something actually wrong with them. What has been your experience of that? You know, do you still get those symptoms? You know, tell me all about it.
Well, I have an entire chapter in my book talking about how I couldn't stop, and excuse my French, but I feel like at this point you kind of get all the vibe of what kind of person I am. I couldn't stop shitting my pants at exactly 7:25 every single morning at school, in high school. And I was so mortified. I ran across campus to go to the bathroom by the theater that no one would go to in the morning. I would start bringing extra underwear with me. I was mortified and finally told my dad, and he took me to see like a gastro, whatever that doctor's called, and they told me I had IBS. So when I was a teenager, I was literally sticking things up my butt to try and solve what was wrong with my tummy. And it wasn't until I became an adult that my first psychiatrist and psychologist psychologist said, your IBS is completely related to your anxiety. We're not even sure it's really IBS. That is surely a symptom, but there is a root cause to this that we can solve and make your IBS better. And I went, what? And that's the first time I really heard about the mind-body connection. You know, I had,
wow,
I felt so betrayed by my brain. You know, mm-hmm. how could you be doing this with, you know, when my panic attacks would happen, I would have very severe depersonalization and derealization where either I'd look down at my hands and I'd be like, I know these are my hands, but they don't feel like my hands, where mm-hmm. I felt very out of body. Or I felt, and I always called it like the Truman Show effect, where I didn't feel like my world and my surroundings were real. And those to me were always, always the scariest parts about panic disorder. You know, the racing heart and the shitting your pants and vomiting and sweating, like that was all stuff that I was like, I know what that is. That's mm-hmm. sweating and physical. This other trauma defense signal my brain was doing, which I didn't know at the time was a form of protection, you know, my brain trying to protect me. Mm-hmm. I did not understand. And I thought I was going crazy. You know, my biggest fear was that I would get stuck this way and I would have to live in this, you know, I always, my biggest fear was always that I was going to completely lose my mind one day and end up in a mental hospital and spend the rest of my life there, and no one that loved me or cared about me would ever come and help and save me. And 'tis an intrusive thought.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I've had those panic attacks too. It's been a long time since I've had those, but it's absolutely terrifying, you know, and I've worked with a lot of people who felt that as well. So what did your journey look like on starting to, you know, get a grip on the anxiety?
It's been a long one, as I'm sure you know. I will say today is the best and most honest and free I've ever felt with myself. And, you know, it started later than I wish it had with my sort of healing and management journey. I definitely always say it's not like a cure. You're not trying to get rid of these things. Like, you need anxiety to be able to like mm-hmm. run from an attacker or like be angry at something. But management was really a long journey from me. So it definitely started with, I think, like the early 90s, late, you know, 90s, the aughts, where all we knew was a psychiatrist, you put a medication over it, and you go to therapy, and you don't tell anyone about anything, and you keep it to yourself. And then I really started to use what I was going through and the work I was creating. And, you know, the more people I would talk to, because I kept it inside for so long, I was so relieved when I finally started talking about it publicly.
What was the response you got when you started talking about it publicly?
The first time I ever made a video really talking about it was when I was at BuzzFeed and it was Mental Health Month, and I had made a video called My Pill Journey talking about all the different medications I had been on, and it was like a stop motion piece where I used the actual pills to make pictures and tell a story. And I thought, well, I'm not, my face isn't in it, so I'm safe. But of course, the internet found out right away. And like the top comment was like, oh my God, I can't believe Kelsey's been going through this or dealing with this. And soon enough, I became like the poster child for mental health. And my first fear was, oh my God, is this going to be the only thing that ever comes up when you Google me? Like, what if I'm trying to get a job or like, you know, date? Is that
so you're having some anxiety about this
exactly
video?
And it was so quickly put to rest by the overwhelming support and feedback, like desperation. It was like a club that was created out of so much suffering, and really letting it out and connecting with other people was a part of that healing. And so I just started to make more and more content about it and videos about it. And, you know, that was really therapeutic. And I always said it was like kind of it was a selfish thing. Like, it felt good to get it out and being able to separate myself from people commenting or maybe even people reaching out that were in desperate need. And I wasn't mentally able to be there for them. And I definitely learned a lot about boundaries and owning it and knowing that it's, I can't help but not talk, like I can't help it. I have to talk about it. Yeah. It's so much a part of my life, and I want everyone to know all the things I've learned to manage. And so, you know, now I'm 31 and I have an amazing routine and really know, you know, I got sober from alcohol 2.5 years ago, and that was a freaking game changer with my panic attacks, like major. And that's not to say I'm perfect and I never struggle. And, you know, even recently I tried to go off my medications to try microdosing for chronic pain. And that was like, it put me right back 10 years ago where I was like, I can't believe after all this time, and I'm literally a mental health advocate. I wrote a book about this. How could I be going through this again? My agoraphobia popped out again. I wasn't leaving my house. I mean, this was December of last year that this happened.
Wow.
And so I'm back on my medications and I'm in a much better place. But even that little experience reminded me that, you know, this is a process, and it healing is not linear, and things will ebb and flow, and you got to take it day by day.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that's one of the things I'd like to tell people too, is that the goal isn't to get rid of the anxiety. You're never going to get rid of the anxiety, but learning how to manage it, learning how to flow with it, learning how to, you know, overcome it when it's happening, and learning how to, you know, take care of yourself in a way that doesn't produce as much anxiety as well. But you said a couple of other interesting things. Just thinking about all the people that came out of the woodwork after your videos, I'm always amazed at how well we can conceal anxiety. Like you can be really close friends with someone or coworkers and never know that they're an anxious person. And I think that that's a kind of fascinating attribute of anxiety, is that we can kind of keep it under wraps. Mm-hmm. What's your experience with that?
Yeah, no one knew how bad it got ever. And I was so embarrassed to ever say, like, hey, I mask as this like successful, like boss energy, like feminist, like I'm so strong person online that I myself was lying about how bad and hard and scary and dark it got. And
yeah.
You know, I ended up starting a Slack room at BuzzFeed called Safe Space. And it was like so many people who joined, all my coworkers, bosses, managers. I was like, we're all in here. And it was just a club to say, hey, if someone needs to go for a walk in the middle of the day, or like if you need a resource or just someone to talk to, like come here. And it really was the first time that I saw how many people were affected in living with this and like came up and said something either privately or publicly about it.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Welcome to The Dough, where Cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, Season 2 is here. Hosted every week by me, X Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season 2 of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, for me, a turning point in working on my own anxiety was really kind of a lot of meditation and learning how to look at my thoughts, back away from them, step away from them, not follow certain thoughts down rabbit holes. But when I think about the way that technology affects our lives, you know, we wake up in the morning and We're looking at our phone before we're out of bed. You know, we're not even having our own thoughts yet. Like my mind isn't even like online yet with coffee. Like I am having thoughts because I'm reacting to all this stuff that's streaming through my phone. You know, what someone ate for dinner last night and what the president did and, you know, and all of that can cause so much anxiety. So before we even get out of bed, you know, it's all gotten away from us.
Yeah. You know, I come from a very privileged position in that I don't have children. I don't have crippling, you know, debt. I don't have college loans to pay off. I get to make my own schedule because I am a creator. Like I'm saying this from a position of white cis privilege, but it is so important to be selfish in your healing journey. And something you said was like nail on the head with to figure out and learn how to unlearn takes a lot of time and energy and practice. And if you have kids screaming and your partner's nagging you and you have bills to pay, and like, when do you ever get a second to just say, why do I think this negative thought? And what's behind that? Like a working mom might be like, fuck off. I do not. Like, are you, I don't even have time to think for myself, let alone dive deeper into my trauma. And to that, I'm like, then it won't get better. You know, then it won't, unless you make a selfish, but selfless choice to say, I have to carve out this, whatever it is, 20 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the morning to journal and get my thoughts out on paper or see a therapist or just talk to someone, because it has to start somewhere. And like a face mask and a bubble bath isn't going to do it. Like the work of undoing years of rapid cycling thoughts or anxious thinking or intrusive thoughts or rumination is going to take time. And so I love, and I always say this, it's a contradictory phrase, but routine gave me so much independence and freedom. If I know in the morning that I'm going to look at my phone to stop my alarm, but I'm not going to get on Instagram or Wordle yet. I'm not going to get on there, even though I've already got text messages coming in of my friends sending me their Wordle scores. I'm like, I can't wait to beat them. But I know that I need to go downstairs and make my matcha latte coffee, like you said. I need to go outside. I need to write in my daily stoic journal. I need to take a somatic look at myself, like what's hurting, where do I feel things. I have to do yoga or whatever practice, meditation, breath work, and then I can step into my day. And I made a drastic change over the pandemic to bump my Calendly and my scheduling up to 10 a.m. Because even though I get up at 7,
yeah,
I need 3 hours to put my life together.
Yeah.
And I still look like this, you know, I still look like this.
You look great.
Thanks. But it took way longer than I wish it would have to figure out that that's what I needed to. And maybe it's for you, it's nighttime, or maybe it's, you know, an hour or even 5 minutes, but you have to make a change if you want to change.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I really appreciate you, you know, pointing out the like the privilege of it, because it does take that time and that work, and we can't all get up and do those things and have that space. You know, I've got 3 kids and a super busy work life and too many pets and things, but I did put in that time. I really put in that time and that work. I learned a lot of those tools and coping mechanisms, and like I know the right things that I have to do. And so even on the days when I don't have the time to really sit and do that kind of daily practice, if I feel the anxiety creeping in, or if I anticipate that there's going to be a day or an event that's going to cause me anxiety, I can preempt it. You know, I have all these tools, and I wouldn't have them if I hadn't really taken the time that I did at one point in my life to work on that stuff. But that's the thing that I also think is really cool about anxiety, is that for as debilitating as it can be, and truly debilitating for people,
yes,
you can also really work on it. Like there are things you can do to really change it and to overcome it largely. And I find that very exciting, because I think that there are some mental health issues that are much harder, and anxiety is one you can actually really work on and make changes pretty quickly, you know, in some ways.
there's like stuff out there for us, y'all. Like stuff that works. Like we're living proof to say you don't have to be like this. You don't have to suffer as deeply as I think we let ourselves to the point of debilitation of life.
I agree. What are your like top five things that you think are most helpful with anxiety? You've mentioned like somatic feeling, you've mentioned like meditation, journal writing. What are the things that you feel are the really good five core things?
Man, only five?
I know. There's a ton, but like I feel like there are some core ones.
Yeah, big time. I would say like having a couples therapist where my partner and I started at like, we've been together 4 years and we were completely different people when we met than who we are now. And we never really fell into ruts of like unhealthiness because we were always in a good, safe couples environment, a couples therapy environment. And people think like, oh, couples therapy is only for people who are divorcing. And it's like, no, do you only go to get your car fixed when it's broken down? Like, no, you got to get your oil changed. You got to get gas. You got to wash it, you know? So I see couples therapy as that being like, I learned so much there about communicating with another individual that I automatically had to learn about myself. Like, why do I snap? Why do I lead by emotion? I immediately go to an emotional place when I'm faced with anxiety or you know, something with my partner. So that's like my number one.
That's a surprising answer. I wasn't expecting you to go to couples therapy, but that's awesome. I think you're really right. Yeah.
Thank you. I also was surprised by myself when I said that, but it was like the first thing that popped into mind. But the second thing I would suggest is, and this was a hard one for me, is I had to go towards the fear. So like when panic disorder happens, like the panic attack would come up and I would be like, oh my God, not again. Holy shit. Like I got to get out of this. I need to fix it. I need to solve it. I need to stop it. And what I realized was I needed to go into the fear and say, okay, what is happening and why? And learning the science and the biology behind why a brain does what it does and like literally get to know about like neural pathway patterns and neuroplasticity and like getting into the psychology of it really helped me go, oh, I can literally explain now why my heart starts to race because I feel like I'm not able to breathe. So I'm over breathing, which is actually making my heart rate go faster instead of slowing down my breath, which is hard to do when you feel like you're choking. You're not like, let me breathe less. So going into the physical science and psychology of what I felt was, you know, knowledge is power is what huge. It felt like.
I had a therapist explain it to me once. That he said, think about it like when you're in a car that's skidding out on an icy road, you're supposed to turn into it to get control over it, right? And I loved that because it makes a lot of sense with anxiety. I think it comes up or we feel that panic attack coming and we slam the door on it rather than leaning into it and inquiring about it, getting to know it, you know, and that is how we kind of get our hands around it.
Yeah, it's you have to make it a friend and hug it and realize like, oh, this is a part of me that's hurting and I need to treat it with as much love and energy that I would like a wounded puppy is kind of the way I think about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. What else?
So I love yoga, which if you would have told me 3 years ago that I would love yoga, I would have smacked you in the face and called you a liar because I hated with my entire being doing yoga. I was forced to do it in college through like theater classes. We had to like learn Alexander technique and I hated it. I thought it was so boring. I was agitated the whole time, frustrated. And I realized, well, yeah, it's because I don't know how to sit with myself. I don't know how to sit with my feelings. I felt like I was wasting time. I could literally be doing anything else. I could learn my lines. I could answer emails. Like, why am I doing this? And it took me a lot of years to say, okay, I have to sit with this and do my scanning and my somatic tracking to recognize what the mind-body connection in is and where are my emotions feeding into pain and where is my pain feeding into my emotions. And the most beautiful way I found that is with doing 20 minutes of free classes on YouTube of daily yoga. It doesn't have to be an expensive sport. I do it in my backyard. I don't go to a gym or classes, But the natural breath work that also comes with yoga is just such a centering, solid thing. And now when I don't do it, I feel cranky and off. Yeah. And, you know, I'll do it in an airport. I'll do it in a hotel. I'll do it anywhere, you know? Yeah, so yoga.
That's amazing. Big. Yoga was one of the big things for me too. And I kind of like, it was like a last ditch effort. Like, what can I try? Because nothing had worked. And I hated it too with a passion. And I hated like the idea of yoga culture too. I was like, oh, please, you know? And but it was the same thing. I was really afraid to be in my body. You know, I had been so afraid to just be in my body, to be present, to breathe, to, you know, just be here. And once I was able to start pushing through that, and it took a lot of crying too, like crying on the mat, just weeping because I was in my body.
Yeah, 100%.
But it really helped as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And for that, that like brings such another great tool is like to have a safe space to cry. And for me, that is therapy. That is talk therapy, you know?
Yeah.
I need someone to listen to what I'm thinking because I'm thinking all the time and I need to be able to have a safe, contained space with a relationship that feels helpful and challenging at times, but helpful to get all of that out. And so, you know, sometimes I'm going through a great period in my life and I'm like, oh, I only need this once a month. And sometimes I'm like, I'm coming twice a week and clear out your schedule.
Yep.
But that's, again, that's that maintenance about, you know, tweaking it to where your schedule and finances allow.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And we would like to invite you on a hilarious and heartfelt journey each week on The Deep Dive. From navigating the chaos of motherhood and family to exploring the depths of grief and loss, we are just two best friends who process life together and with you guys. Discover our secrets to finding joy amidst the madness and get ready for unfiltered conversations about life, love, and everything in between. And nails. We talk a lot about nails. Now, community is everything to us at The Deep Dive. We believe in the power of connection and the strength that comes from supporting one another, and we would love to have you with us. So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't get enough of your favorite Lemonada Media podcasts? By subscribing to Lemonada Premium today, you'll gain access to fun and inspiring bonus content from all of our podcasts across the Lemonada Media network. As a subscriber, you can listen to never-before-heard interview excerpts between Julia Louis-Dreyfus and her A-plus guests on Wiser Than Me, laugh along with Elise Myers as she and her guests play a rapid-fire questions game on Funny 'Cause It's True, and continue to uncover new ways to make life suck less through our exclusive subscriber audio. Check out a free trial of Lemonada Premium today in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button.
All right, well, we have some really good listener questions that I'd love to get your take on. So Liz from Boston says, sometimes I feel like I'm addicted to anxiety. I'm miserable when I'm in a panic, but I can't pull myself out of the cycle that creates anxiety in the first place. It's like I can't stop doing things the hard way. I'll avoid a task because it makes me anxious, but then I'm even more anxious because it's looming over me. How do I stop setting myself up for this?
Ooh, girl, if it ain't me, if it ain't me. I had that exact same feeling in my 20s, was like, is this just where I'm comfortable? Is this where I thrive? Like, does my anxiety push me to be more successful and more of a perfectionist? And like, it became a like hidden superpower where I was like, I don't want to tell anyone that this is like my fuel, but like, I was worried that I would never get better because I became addicted to it, that it was like my entire identity. But what helped me was being able to separate myself from it and say, that's a space that I feel comfortable in, and how can I seek discomfort? So if it's letting a stack of papers sit on my desk, like forcing that confrontation with myself to say, like, this makes me really uncomfortable, but I'm going to let that be there until Saturday, and then I'll get to it, and then I'll clear this thing out, and like make these little challenges for myself. Or like, I really want to leave right now, and I don't know if it's because I really want to go home or is it my social anxiety. And it's like, okay, I challenge myself one more drink, not an alcoholic now, of course, and try and introduce yourself to one more person, or even just stand there, like just don't flight from the situation. So I started putting myself in uncomfortable situations that of course then started to reveal themselves to be not as scary as I had thought they were going to be if I mm-hmm. left that safe, anxious space, which is such an oxymoron.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. I think sometimes too, I see people kind of addicted to worry and this mm-hmm. feeling, and I've gone through it myself too, this feeling that if you stop worrying, then something really bad's going to happen. It's like if we're worrying about it, then we have some kind of control over it, or like we're trying to get ahead of something. And the feeling of not worrying can feel scary, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've had to do some work around just not worrying about things, you know?
That's really beautiful.
M from Washington says, best tips, advice, and practices when having an anxiety spiral. What strategies do you recommend to stop, intercept, and redirect a spiral from taking over?
Okay, mine's a little extreme.
Let's hear it.
No joke, dead ass, jump into cold water or take a cold shower. Like, I know exactly what it is where you think, I need to get this all out right now because it's all bubbling up. And it's like, you're doing the reverse. You're like giving gas to the car and you're like mm-hmm. helping it drive. You need to stop that, is it parasympathetic nervous system from... Mm-hmm. And you need to hit your vagus nerve with something new that will redirect and distract. And sometimes distraction is helpful, you know? So my thing is jump in a cold shower and you're going to hate it at first. So keep it on warm and then like slowly move the lever to cold and then it won't be as bad. Or just fucking go for it, balls to the walls, and like go all the way to cold. But if you don't have the patience, or if sitting there and writing out your thought and then going, what's the reverse of that? And then writing that and going, now I'm going to embody that, doesn't seem practical, because the first time someone told me to do that, I was like, fuck off. Like, I'm not going to sit here and write out my thoughts and try to physically find the opposite. I started jumping into cold bodies of water.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think changing up your environment, if you're inside, go outside, you know, like just doing things, even eating something will like distract your whole system from what you're doing. I like to also, I'll call like one of my best friends or my husband and tell them all of my like this irrational chain of thoughts I'm having. And the minute I'm saying it out loud to somebody rational and sane, it helps me to step away from it.
And go like, oh yeah, I'm doing that thing like, that I do.
The sentence is halfway out of my mouth and I'm already like, oh.
Yeah, it's a lot of like, oh, this is a good one. What if, or yeah, what if, then what? So if you're always saying what if, what if, what if, then mm-hmm. go to then what? Start to add that to the end of your sentence. Then what? What are you going to do? What if I have a panic attack if I go to this party? Then you'll leave. Yeah. What if I have a panic attack if I go to this party? Then I'll order a pizza and call an Uber and like have a night in. Like start adding a then what. And that might, again, make you feel like a little more agency over the worry.
Yeah, I think that's really important advice. And that's that idea of kind of leaning into it and getting to know it too, right? Like leaning into the fear. I've made myself do that too. Like, a pain in my side. I'm like, oh my God, I have cancer and I'm going to die. And then I'm like, well, you know, what happens if I get cancer? I might not die actually. Like I could get cancer and like be okay, you know, or just
like change for the better.
But we often like hit that fear thought and then that's it. Stay. We don't go any further and we just ruminate on that. So I think that's really good to point out. All right. Kate from Oakland says, I've never thought of myself as someone with anxiety issues. Being a parent in this pandemic, navigating work, life, kids, inconsistent childcare, being a wife, it is so stressful. I feel like I'm constantly on high alert and cannot manage. Things that would normally not bother me cause me anxiety. I try to find time for self-care and have a very supportive partner, but it doesn't feel like enough to make a difference in this constant state of stress. How do I get out of this funk when it also seems like we are living with this pandemic for the foreseeable near future? How do I manage my daily stresses and not take on the overwhelming sadness in the news? Would love some advice, or perhaps just to hear that I'm not the only one feeling this.
I mean, I feel like you should start because you are a mom in the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think one of the things that I'm noticing here, I mean, we are all living in this insanely stressful time. And I think one of the things that I keep pointing out is that it's really difficult to live in uncertainty. Mm. I think pre-pandemic, it's not like anything was certain, but we were in this illusion that it was. We thought we knew what life was about and how it was going to go. And that got pulled out from underneath us. And for a couple of years now, we've been sitting in this constant space of like not knowing what's going to happen next month, you know, next right. week, or if the kids are going to be coming home from school again or whatnot. And a lot of it's getting comfortable being uncomfortable, getting comfortable being uncertain, you know? So I think that that is a piece there that's really helpful to work on. I love mindfulness for that. Doing some mindfulness meditations, getting really present. I think when we're in that uncertain space and we're anxious, we're thinking a lot about the future and like all these what ifs, and we're thinking a lot about the past and things that were, could have been, instead of just being right here, right now. You know, we're in all these thoughts that aren't real. So bringing your awareness to here. But one of the last things that I would love to ask you to talk on here that you mentioned earlier when we were speaking is, it sounds almost like Kate maybe has gotten herself into that anxious cycle where you really, your thoughts start to go there all the time. And there are things you can do once you've gotten yourself into that anxiety place. Sometimes we get stuck in that pattern, and there are things we can do to pull ourselves out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. What I'm hearing from that too is what stuck with me is she feels like her body is stuck in this high frequency, if you will. And you're probably correct.
Yeah.
You know, you start to develop pathways of, you know, the way I like to think of it is like there's a snowblower in your mind and a guy's like going over the same path every time. You're like, well, what about the pandemic? When is it ever going to end? What about my kids? Like, he's just going over the same path over and over again. And like, there's not even snow. There's like snow over here. And he's just like going over gravel and now like gravel shooting all over the place. And your body probably is going to start reacting more sensitively to things, right? Like a lot of people with anxiety, high debilitating anxiety, become highly sensitive to noises, sounds, smells. You know, when my partner and I first started dating, it, God forbid, he jumped out from behind the corner and said, boo, I would collapse to the ground and start crying. And he was like, oh shit, I was not prepared for this. And I was like, why is my body reacting that way? But it's a safety mechanism where your brain has gone, there is trouble and fear and I need to protect you. So your heart rate's probably risen. Your senses are more aware of things going on. And so I think a lot of like body work too for Kate would be great. Like a massage, perhaps with some a healer who knows maybe about Reiki, or even like a Thai massage. Like that bitch will beat you up, and really like getting in your body. Or like I love a good float tank moment, or you know, chirotherapy, or a sauna, or day at the spa. Something to get you into your body and remember what it feels like to get everything down a couple frequency, down a couple notches.
But also like learning how to step away from some of those anxious thoughts. Because again, just like with the snowblower, we're creating these neural pathways where we just automatically go into these places over and over and over. Wake up every day anxious about the pandemic, you know, hear a clip of news right into that space. And so learning how to recognize when you're stepping into that space and pivot, you know, have a go-to thought that you change to, or you just recognizing that you're doing that and, you know, replacing the thought with something else. I think some of that work can really help too, because we really can get stuck in those places unless we do something about it. It's not going to kind of undo itself is the problem.
Like a moment of gratitude, like even if it's just, oh no, the pandemic, we're living another day. Like, oh my God, these palm trees outside of my window are so gorgeous and like sunny and like my disco ball shining, and like replace it with a moment of gratitude.
Yeah. I also like to throw in some self-compassion, you know, just like be nice to yourself. You know, it's like, it's okay that you're having an anxious moment. We just went through a pandemic or still are or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's okay that that's not easy, you know.
It's okay not to be okay. Whatever that song is. Who sings that? I don't know.
Oh my God, this is such an awesome conversation. I feel like we could just go for hours.
I know.
I'm so glad you're doing this work. I'm so glad you're putting all of this out there. So many people need this. And I'm just so grateful to you.
Back at you.
Thank you so much, Kelsey.
Thanks, Claire.
I am so grateful for the work that Kelsey is doing to help people better understand anxiety. I can't even tell you how much I wish I'd had this kind of information when I first started going through it myself. Talking to her made me realize how important it is for all of us to be more open about our struggles. So this week's practice is about learning how to better understand your anxiety and also about how to separate yourself from what's making you anxious. Worry and overwhelm are inevitable responses to life. But when it gets away from you and starts to affect your daily functioning and relationships, then it's time to do some work. But trust me when I tell you that even just a little bit of work in this realm will really get you into a better place. The best way to get started is by getting to know your anxiety. This week, start to notice your anxious thoughts. I like to jot them down. Try to notice if you tend to focus on specific worries and thoughts, and also try to notice if these thoughts occur at specific times or in specific environments. Try to pause the next time you find yourself in an anxious moment. Instead of running from it, sit with it for a minute. Think of it like a blinking yellow light at an intersection. Slow down, look around, pay attention to what's going on that's causing you anxiety. Notice where you feel anxiety in your body. Ask yourself what you can control. Decide upon one small step you can take right now to make yourself feel better. Like the next time you find yourself in an anxious moment, find ways to shift the moment. Jump in a cold shower, eat something, go outside, switch rooms, do some body work. Try massages and float tanks and saunas to remember what it feels like to have a calmer frequency. Have a go-to thought or a mantra to help pivot from the anxious thoughts. Over time, this is how you will gain control over what's making you anxious. For even more great tools, check out Kelsey's workbook, Don't Fucking Panic, The Shit They Don't Tell You in Therapy About Anxiety Disorder, Panic Attacks, and Depression. For tips, tricks, and stories about Kelsey being diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, panic, and major depressive disorder. You can also check out my book, Anxiety, The Missing Stage of Grief, which explores the connection between grief and anxiety. Overall, remember, anxiety is something you can overcome and find ways to manage. Learning how to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, learning how to sit in uncertainty will be something that will see you through so much of life's hard stuff. Lastly, don't forget to be kind to yourself as you do this work. Anxiety is no fun, and there's nothing wrong with you. So many of us struggle with this, and it doesn't have to be that way. As always, thank you for listening. I would love to hear your thoughts around this issue and anything and everything else we talk about on this podcast. If you get a chance, send me a question through my online form at bit.ly/newdayask. It's totally anonymous. You can literally ask me anything, and you can find the link in the show notes. Or if you just want to tell me about one of your weekly practices, call and leave me a voicemail at 833-4-LEMONADA. That's 833-453-6662. Or email me at newday@lemonadamedia.com. New Day is a Lemonada original. The show is produced by Chrissy Pease and Ariana Giles. Kat Yore is our engineer. Music is by Hannes Brown. Our VP of weekly content is Steve Nelson. And our executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax, Jessica Cordova-Kramer, and me, Claire Bidwell-Smith. New Day is produced in partnership with the Well-Being Trust, the Jed Foundation, and Education Development Center. Help others find our show by leaving us a rating and writing a review. Follow us at Lemonada Media across all social platforms, or find me at clairebidwellsmith.com. Join our Facebook group to connect with me and fellow New Day listeners at facebook.com/groups/newdaypod. That's facebook.com/groups/newdaypod. You can also get bonus content and behind the scenes material by subscribing to Lemonada Premium on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Last Day is a show about the moments that change us.
I just don't think I will ever get used to this.
I'm Stephanie Wittles-Wax, and I have had one of these moments. We all have. So let's unpack the chaos that is our human existence together.
I don't believe things happen for a reason. I don't believe the universe has a plan.
Each week, I sit down with a new guest to explore happy, sad stories of transformation.
It's leaning far, far into the pain. That's what it is.
Listen to Last Day wherever you get your podcasts.